Blog Talk Radio.
Hey. Good evening, it's Jane Hoffman. How are you tonight? I was going to play a quick little song before John and Bob call in. It's open topic tonight. What's on your mind, America? I put a shout out on Twitter at Gravity Politique. There's a lot of things going on right now with the midterm elections, budget funding, and we'll talk about that tonight. Good evening, John. That was Taylor Swift.
Wow. How the times
have
changed.
I've gone from your Christian songs to Daniel's rapping to Taylor Swift.
Isn't she supposed to be country?
Yeah, but she did a pop song, and that particular song has been number one in the country for like 3 weeks.
Right, and in fact, I was hearing someone was playing a country song out in Marina Del Rey. I was bicycling by, and there was a total country song, and this guy started rapping in the middle of the song, in a country song.
That's a little different.
It's crazy. The whole world is upside down.
We have open topic tonight. I have one funny thing to discuss with you, but I want you to go first and share me what you... I did see an interesting verse in Psalm 29, but I would like you to tell me what you would like to talk about.
Well, you know, over the weekend I saw a special about World War II, about D-Day, and it was interesting because we think about how the... how we were victorious, but the backstory on that day was that everything that could go wrong went wrong, and it was just a disastrous situation because it was war, and in war, it's not going to go smoothly because you're putting all your energies in one direction and someone's putting it in the opposite, and life is kind of like that. You know, we sometimes get knocked around with situations, and we're not prepared for it. And a lot of it is we just have to keep going and overcome these things and not let these things, you know, set us back. And it was just really amazing. You know, everything they planned for, every little contingency, all backfired that day. And, you know, people were dying left and right. And there were leaders that had to stand up and not lose their confidence or their faith. And it was just amazing.
I think a lot of people died on that beachhead. Wasn't there an unusual amount of people who died?
Yeah, you know, the problem was several things. They set it up in advance. It was a beach that was basically, there's a lot of choppy waves. So they, several weeks in advance, looked at all the weather conditions and figured June 6th would be the best, calmest day. They set things up. They sent 13,000 guys out there. And there was two things supposed to help them. They had designed some tanks that would float. These were like floating tanks. They basically put them in kind of like a basket with propellers that would float. And they tested them on calm water. On the day of the event, when they launched them in the rough seas, water started to get in there, and of the 29 tanks they sent, 27 of them sank to the bottom of the ocean. And
how many?
The crew, 27 out of 29 sank, even though they had tested them.
God.
They tested them on calm water, right? And then the other thing was, this is, they just discovered radar. And so the idea was they were going to fly some planes overhead and bomb the coastline, so that way they would have cover. The problem is it was cloudy and they couldn't see, so they had to guesstimate. And what happened is, you know, when you're flying, you know, I don't know, 500 miles an hour dropping a bomb, if you're off by a couple seconds, you know, it means hitting the target or missing it by a mile. So they kept dropping everything past the drop point, so they didn't hit any German targets. So these 13,000 guys go to this beachhead with no defense. It's just a slaughter zone. And, you know, they didn't have the backup. They didn't have tanks. And the Germans figured it was kind of a beach they weren't planning on originally. The Americans did a fake movement. Basically, they had inflatable rubber tanks and trucks. They're all, like, fake, that they were putting at other beaches to make them think they were going to go in and, you know, make a move elsewhere. And Rommel's at the... A couple of weeks before, he thought, you know what, there's a couple of beaches here farther away south that would be ideal, and he fortified all of those. So when they showed up, it was disastrous. In fact, they dropped a bunch of guys in the ocean to help, and the part of the problem was actually not the ocean, in open land, and Rommel's flooded some of the fields with tons of water. So when these guys landed, it wasn't on land, it was in water, and they had all this parachute equipment that they couldn't get unhitched, so hundreds of guys drowned, paratrooping in to help the ground troops. So it was just an incredible, crazy event.
Yeah, I did, when I first started my grad program in 2003, I took a class on Western Europe, and I did... Henry Kissinger has this book called Diplomacy, and he covered it section by section from like 1650 to 2000. And I did know that D-Day was a disaster, but the Allies prevailed because they stuck with it, and they ended up pushing the Germans back out of France.
What happened is, you know, they hit this beach, and it's just like target practice. They have no defense. And the Germans had put about, you know, thousands of bombs, mines, barbed wire.
The Germans were in the high cliffs just waiting for them.
Just waiting.
Bob's on the line, too, so I'll give you two more sentences.
Oh, cool. So basically what happened is there was a certain point where they breached the first barbed wire, and they had a second level, and all the leaders had been killed. So he had a bunch of American soldiers, you know, who were just inexperienced. There's one guy, I think it's General Dakota. He led a charge of men, and he said, "We can either die here on the beach or die here on the cliffs." And they sent one extra guy to try and break the barbed wire, and he got shot. So everyone was panicking. It was one of those live-or-die moments. And the general said, "Follow me," and he jumped up and he started running, and everyone followed after him. And it was that brave moment that just, you know, in that situation, that turned their tide there, and everyone rallied around that. And, you know, the point is, how does this affect, you know, me? It's like there's things in my life that just have gone totally.
Okay, before you get into that, can we reel Bob in?
Yes, let's bring him in.
I apologize. Hi, good evening. I apologize. I missed the opening. I'm not certain which battle or even what war.
You missed Taylor Swift singing a pop song, and you missed John. I asked John. I told him it's open topic night, and he supposedly saw this incredible movie on D-Day. Now, I know a lot about World War II too, but I know a little about D-Day and all the tributes that they have year after year. But it is about D-Day, June 6, 1942, I believe.
44.
Or 44. Yeah, 44. So, John, go ahead with your statement towards Bob so he understands.
Oh, yeah. So what I was going to say is there's events that have happened in my life that where everything that I planned went totally the reverse, you know, and where there were great losses. You know, I lost properties, lost the marriage, you know, business opportunities, health, car. You know, even the brakes on my bicycle, you know, the front ones went out. Last week, I left my, in a plastic bag, I left my driver's license, debit card, and a check on the bus. It must have fell out of my pocket. And, you know, things like that just make you want to
Are you serious?
I kid thee not.
So now you have to go to the DMV and someone might steal your checking account?
Possibly. It's all possible. So things like this happen, and, you know, we want to just quit. But the thing about it is you just have to persist. This is war. These, you know, like you can't stop. You have to keep going. And you have to devise your best plan and not give up. And, you know, you will have casualties, but you can't go back. You know, you can't bring back what you lose. You just have to keep going forward. So what I'm saying is...
Okay, well, I think Bob kind of wanted to get in on, not life lessons, but on the invasions in Normandy on Omaha Beach.
Yeah.
So, Bob, could you shed some light? I just have a quick question. Yeah, go ahead.
I want to agree with John that you have to keep going forward, you know. I think of myself much of the time as being in a little boat that has a leak in the bottom of it, and I have to continually bail to keep the boat from sinking. I have to, you know, have to be pointed towards shore. So I'm rowing towards shore, you know, while bailing. Have to do both at the same time, or else, you know, you know, if you're not taking care of all the things that matter. Now, you can be successful in doing this, but you're sinking over here, you know. So, yeah, life is a struggle. That's true.
Now that we've gotten on this tangent, I mean, there's only so much to say about Omaha Beach, but the fact of the matter is it was the tip of the iceberg. The first couple of days were miserable, but they overcame and they beat the Germans up in the high cliffs. So I'm just going to read this verse quick from Psalms. I was reading the Bible on the other day at Psalms 29, and I'll allow John and Bob to keep commenting because I'm going to take a back seat tonight. Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon water. Now I'm going to drop down to verse 7, Psalm 29:7. The voice of the Lord divideth the flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shaketh the wilderness, and he shaketh the wilderness of Kadesh. So is God really still in charge? And I like that verse about he divideth the flames of fire, because if the Lord is really that powerful, then where is he right now with all these battles going on around the world?
Well, part of the answer is God's time is not our time. And his victory is not, his victory is the ultimate victory. It's not all the little battles that fought all along the way. You know, Satan thinks he's winning because he's winning so many of these little battles.
Talk about is the man in Oklahoma who chopped a 54-year-old lady's head off in the middle of the store. And he was a converted Muslim in an Oklahoma Super Value store.
Yeah, I didn't. I've only a little bit heard about that. I don't know the full story, but I think the pertinent point there probably has less to do with Islam and more to do with his mental health.
Well, you know what, though? I'm starting to think that when I worked in the John, I'm going to let you talk next because you're the one who's in charge of the show, but when I worked in the Minneapolis library, I met this young girl who was reading the Quran, and her black boyfriend was trying to get her to become a Muslim, and I'm just wondering, that was 13 years ago, or 14. I mean, what percent of Muslims are really peaceful? ISIS asked people in Western countries to do these kinds of things. So, you know, it's possible that that guy was under some kind of, like, cult-like thinking that he had to chop that innocent American's head off to make some leverage. John?
I'm listening. I was actually waiting for Bob's comment on that.
I didn't hear the details. I just heard a little bit about that happening. I didn't hear all the details in the news, but I'm going to stick to my earlier statement that the man who did this probably has serious mental health problems, and he may have done it as a Muslim, you know, to support ISIS, but I suspect not.
He grew up in a Christian home.
I would like to make a statement.
Here, let me just. I'm gonna put his mom on the air quick. Here's a quick video.
On behalf of my son, Alfred Nolan, my heart is just so heavy right now. I know my son. My son was raised up in a loving home. My son was raised up believing in God. That's what he believed. My son was a good kid. You know, I know what they're saying that he's done, but I'm going to tell you this. That's not my son. There's two sides to every story. And we're only hearing one. His family. Our hearts bleed right now. Because what they're saying, Alton has done. I want to apologize to both families. Because this is not Alton.
Hey, that's enough. She's not too educated. Basically, to me, the new Muslim movement is almost like a cult. If it's going to lead people to drastic killing of just random human beings. John, what say you?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where you don't hear a lot of people in the Muslim community down, like, talking it down like it's bad. So that is one thing. There's almost like this fear of speaking out, like they may be the next target. So that is kind of, you know, disconcerting. You want to see, you know, leadership step up and you know, make a statement on that. And but I think that's just kind of the environment that we live in. You know, people are going to start copycatting, and you're going to see out of you know, a few million or billion people, you know, one out of a million people are really messed up. So you're going to see several isolated situations like that. It's just people that are
actually
ill, and
there was a Muslim counselor somewhere. I don't know if it was in New York or whatever. They did poo-poo the thing that he did. They did downplay it and say it was terrible.
Right. You see a couple people here and there, but I'm talking about the leadership as a whole. You know, you don't see that, and it's maybe in their mosque, you know, maybe they're talking about it, you know, and that's possible. But I'm saying you don't see a lot in the press about it, whether it's, you know, downplayed or criticized, mainly because I think they're afraid, you know. Western people are afraid to, you know, even criticize. They just kind of want to, like, gloss over it, you know. I mean, if Christians were doing this, it'd be terrible. You know, I mean, they would just totally want to, you know, imprison us and kill us and persecute us. So, I don't know.
Well,
it seems like the standard.
I guess with John's story on D-Day and how it's affected his own disastrous life and my reading of Psalm Am I reading a Psalm 29 about when I was down one day last week and I opened up the Bible to some page and it says, the Lord divides the world with fire? I want a piece of that power of God. I want to understand that there must be some control in this world and there must be some prevention of more crazy things happening. And I think this radio show is a part of that, but we can only reach so many people.
Yeah, I think you'll see that there's free will involved, and people can do whatever they're going to do. And at the end of time, God will judge it. I think that's because you see a lot of madness going on, and you wonder, where's God in it? Oh, he's quite aware of what's going on. But it's not, as you know, Bob was saying, it's timing. It's not the specific time of judgment. It's not the specific time for Messiah. And when he's revealed, you know, that's when you're going to see all of Jesus' parables he talked about. Like, he's gone away, the leader, and he comes back. And to be aware and to be ready because, you know, people won't be watching. They'll be caught unawares like a thief in the night. So it's all part of the program. We shouldn't be dismayed
about
it. Well, that's okay. You know, he said,
Bob, how do you think, Bob, look at,
yes.
John is trying to make it as a musician. I'm trying to make it out of the legal system. And you're trying to make it as an author. I mean, when I hear about these politicians who have 57 million and they're just running for the Senate for fun, I mean, I think we miss the boat somewhere. How come us Christians are so powerless in the world? On some level, at least.
In my opinion, Christianity has, to a large extent, lost its way in the 20th century. A lot of things have not gone the way they should have. Mainly, it's because individual Christians aren't Christians.
Well, that's true. Now, John helps people on an everyday basis. He gives to everybody, but now that his car is on the fritz, John, can you even deliver food to that lady who was from the royalty? That actress royalty family, the one who lives outside...
Yeah.
Yeah, are you able to even deliver food still?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, the car will run for 15 to 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and it starts to overheat. So quick little runs I can do. And I kind of improvise. You know, there's bike, there's bus. There's just different ways to wheel and deal. But I think one thing that to touch upon what Bob said, too, is Jesus said, my kingdom's not of this world. If we're expecting equity and we're expecting, you know, the kingdom of God right here, right now, it's not that time. And that's coming, you're going to see, you know, not only now, but later, you're going to see even more craziness. And that's just natural. You know, we're not to be dismayed about that or worried. And I think part of the problem what we run into is realize there are millions and millions of people just in the United States. So when you hear of a couple guys that have, you know, a lot of money in Senate or leaders, that's a very disproportionate part of the population. It's not the majority of the people. You know, the majority of the people are that 95% or 97% or 50%. But it's we read about the 2 or 3% and think that's the way the world runs. It's not, you know. It's always been that way.
Well, I guess I was throwing something. I'll tell you what happened this week to me. I've been doing all the right things. I've been staying out of the casino. And I'm going to put it in the third person now. Charlotte went to court this week, and she's been doing everything right. And then she got kind of a small blow. And then the person she offended said they would drop all the charges, which was good, but then they want money under the table, and Charlotte might just have to do 30 days in jail still. And it's going to be impossible to pay back restitution if Charlotte does that.
I have a lot of friends into prosperity scriptures, and they talk about being blessed and having exceedingly abundantly pressed down, shaken up, running over. If you claim it, you know, God will, like, speak it into
claim it and name it.
Yes. And, you know, and that's great. For some people it works. But, you know, the reason that Normandy and Story or D-Day affects me, there was a lot of really good kids, some of them God-fearing people, that went on that beach, and they got blown away. Never had kids, never came back, never had
I know.
And they paid that sacrifice for us so we could walk around watching MTV and talking about prosperity, you know, Christianity and this and that, and or materialism, or, you know, even hedonism that the secular world has. The point is...
Kind of like you'll have guaranteed happiness?
We all have a certain destiny, and sometimes it's not blessing or prosperity or greatness or whatever. Sometimes it's just being an example of being consistent. You know, like those kids inspired me. Some of them were 15 years old. They weren't supposed to be in the army. They you know, like, took their brother's identity or whatever to get in because they wanted to help. And then here they are getting shot into pieces on a beach, you know, for freedom. And you think, like, you know, where was the glory in that? It's like because they were doing the right thing, because they were being the right person they needed to be in God's cosmic universe. So for me, I find inspiration in that. It's like it doesn't matter. You know, kind of that picture of my dad I have. He's plowing his little, mowing the lawn on a big, you know, acre of land overlooking the city. No one cares. No one notices. But he's plowing his straight little path. If you can't look behind him or you'll go off course, you know, he's just doing his job. He knows his place in the universe. So that's a very precious thing.
Yeah, my dad served in World War II, but he wasn't at D-Day. Bob, do you have something to add?
They call it, someone called it, the greatest generation, because the challenge was so great, and so many people stepped up to the challenge and gave their all. The other day I was talking with a lady who was bemoaning the fact that today so many males in this country are not men. You know, the values that we once had, you know, 50 or 100 years ago, have dried up and disappeared.
That's very true. I started dating someone lately. He was a perfect friend, but when it came to what he wanted in a relationship, it was totally selfish, and I just couldn't go there with him.
Right. Well,
you know, going along with that, though, in a certain way, men's roles used to be very defined. You go in, you earn your money, your woman stands behind you, raises a family, you work together, and it was simple. It was so defined. You knew what your roles were. And then when we started kind of blurring that line, women are trying to become men, they're in the workforce, they want to even be soldiers like men, and they even want... You know, they want the same benefit, but when it comes down to other consequences, they don't want that. You know, like with the Ray Rice thing. You know, a woman slugs Ray Rice, and they go, you know, hey, it's no big deal. Ray Rice, you know, punches her like he's a bad villain. It's like, okay, I understand that, but are you going to go equal treatment on this? It's like, if you want to be treated like a man, then take a man's consequence. And I think you're seeing that in society. It doesn't pay to be a man anymore. It's like, a woman will take you to court and clean you out if you give her a couple of kids. She'll divorce you after 6 months because she's unhappy. And it's not like it used to be. It's not a safe place. It's a killing field. You know, it's a beach where you get
shot at. I don't think
all
women are like that, though, John. I live in the Midwest. Not all women.
Let me answer your statement. I was married 15 years. I was faithful to my wife. She ditched me, and I had put myself in a part-time job while she was working at Century City, making $60,000. This was in the 80s, in the entertainment field, and we were pursuing a dream. And she ditched in the middle of it to bang the bass player that I was paying $75 a gig for. My brother was 18 years married, supporting his wife. She felt unhappy and ditched him and then wanted support after she got her degree while he was working at the print shop. Gonzalo, my brother-in-law, same thing. 18 years of marriage. Out the
okay,
door.
Okay, so we've all
like
been
that.
Burned. And I actually burned my husband. And sometimes people just don't know what they want, John.
I'm just saying, for the hardworking, God-fearing American male who puts out, it's not a safe zone. And those experiences, now, have they jaded me? Yes. But you know what? I forgive, I love, and I move forward. But for most people, they're going to go, kamikaze.
Okay.
I'm just asking the question, what happened to the American male? It's like, he got,
I'm sure if you give one more nice woman a chance, who maybe doesn't live, is tempted by the entertainment industry, that you'll find the right kind of woman.
There's a lot of great, wonderful women, but most of them have been married already, and the guys aren't dumb enough to mess that up. But, yeah, there's a lot of great women out there.
Well, there's failure in both sexes, and we're a little off topic right now, John.
Oh,
wouldn't
yeah.
you agree?
Oh, definitely. I love it, though. It's, we just don't.
Well, we can't always get what we want, but at least if we go grocery shopping tomorrow, hopefully we won't get our head cut off.
Absolutely.
So we'll have to settle for fruit salad over death. Okay.
That's quite a choice.
Bob, do you have any comments? We have 15 minutes left in the show.
I too have been burned. It was a long time ago.
Okay, we can talk about this in the next 15 minutes. I guess this is where we're leading.
But
go ahead and tell us about your story.
I don't know if my case is really relevant to the stories of most other people. There were other factors in my case that I'm exceptional in some ways.
I know it was before you turned 20. Did she cheat on you?
Yes. She left me for
okay.
my best friend.
Well, you and John have something in common, sort of. Right? Did you ever get over it?
I don't know. I never got seriously re-involved, the lady that I currently call my lady friend is the closest to being re-involved that I've ever been. And we have never even kissed on the lips or anything, so it's not. It's not like,
but she is your faithful companion in many other ways.
In many other ways, yes. But I'm going to say, as far as I know, because she exhibits some, suspicious behavior.
John decided at least since 2000 that he's not going to remarry. That he's just going to serve the Lord till the Lord reappears. Right, John?
Right, unless a Christian supermodel shows up and, wants to take me on a world tour, pulls up in her, or $100,000 car and says, jump in, I'm not going to fight that. You know, I'm game. But I think with a lot of this, you know, what's happened is just we've lost our innocence, our spirituality, and that's where a lot of this confusion comes in. Just our value systems are mixed up. It's not a traditional Christian heritage we're following. We've got all these materialistic, hedonistic, you know, Slick, my musical brother, spent like 6 or 7 hours on the internet listening to all these Illuminati videos about Beyonce and Bieber. And
oh, God.
But you know what? Half the stuff on it is really pretty dead on. But I told him, I said, I don't think these people go in a back room and meet a high priest and, you know, sacrifice a baby or have sex with a virgin.
She made a pyramid symbol at the Super Bowl.
Yes, all of them do. They all do the, you know, they say it's a 666 symbol, and you know, all these different things covering the side of their face, and you know, the imagery, and you know, they always wear the same kind of priestess outfits, you know, sooner or later. But the point is, I think, you know, we ran into that in the 70s and 80s, you know, with AC/DC and Dio and Black Sabbath. You know, bands would do songs about castles and snakes and lizards and dragons and, you know, so forth, and made a lot of money off of people's superstitions. So I think most
Tipper Gore was on the committee to end some of those groups.
I think with most of these people nowadays, you know, whether it's Will Smith, whether it's Taylor Swift, whether it's you know, Madonna or whoever, I think most of them, you know, at some level think that they're either, you know, following God or their inner self, like Oprah, and you know, their inner Jesus, and so forth, and that they're, some of them even claim to be Christian, but they just have kind of mixed up their value system, where it's really more hedonism. It's following themselves.
That's true.
Go ahead.
But I think there's people like Oprah and Madonna who at least sink money into charities that are worthwhile. Like Madonna sinks money into that Central African orphanage, so they do specific benefits that help the world. They're not just self-absorbed in their own foolishness.
No, but the problem is like anyone who watches Oprah, they found out that women in general were more depressed because they looked at their life compared to hers and always felt there's something missing. Like they're being told, you know, you can have the perfect life, you can have the perfect this and that. And it's, for most people, that's not reality, you know. Some people are quadriplegic. Some people are blind. You know, some people never find the, you know, put it this way. You go to a club, and how many out of 100 people, how many of them are beautiful, talented, and with money, right? You know, a handful, a couple, you know, guys or gals. The majority of us aren't going to get that. It's not physically possible.
Well, as Christians, we have 10 minutes left. As Christians, I don't even though I had a gambling addiction for a year, 1.5 years, or maybe 1.25 years, I didn't really crave anything materialistically. I craved nothing of this world. I did enjoy the excitement of the casino, but as far as craving things of the world, I don't want to look fat and old, but some of my wrinkles have started to appear under my chin, like I have a stretched out chin. I want my face to look good. I don't care that much about my body, but I work out 3 times a week. But I know what you're saying, John, that people have diluted their Christian walk by not staying pure and focused, by just helping their brother and being an instrument of good in the world.
And a lot of it's, you know, by, you look at our media, it's like everything's beautiful, people, models, and, you know, you can have this and that. I mean, just to watch the TV for 5 minutes. And it even spreads into the church. You know, we have beautiful televangelists. You know, you don't see, you know, people with bad clothes or who are really ugly or overweight. You know, and not too much. They're like hip people. It's all about marketing and strategy and all that. One thing that I learned though through my divorce and all that is, you know, some people may say, well, you're jaded or you don't want to have a relationship. It's not even that. I'm just free of a lot of stuff. If a relationship comes, that's great. But that's not my happiness. Someone else. Yeah. Or
well, you do a lot of things that you enjoy, like produce music. A lot of people don't have that fulfillment in their avocations. Now, Bob focuses a lot on writing every day, and he's been pretty involved with that woman, but if she didn't live with him as a friend or whatever, I'm not going to get into it, Bob, but you probably wouldn't be seeking a relationship either unless you really... I don't want to speak for you, but, like, I'm a single parent, and I work 80 to 90 hours a week, and I barely have time to go to the grocery store to just feed the kids. I have two kids here this year, one who is visiting from out west. And, I could go get a booty call for 15 minutes once a week, but would that really be fulfilling? I really just don't have time. And like Bob, who his passion is his research, he has friends in the building, right, Bob? But you're not really out looking for a woman. At least that's how I see you.
Yeah. I want to move back to bounce off something John said about part of the reasons why many Christians are women are depressed, or that Christians are misdirected, because, you know, we see these ministers who are so well dressed and so attractive, and everything is all so beautiful. And it kind of, it warps our it gives us false values in that area. Back around 400 AD, St. Jerome made a statement that regarding, at that time they had some really rich, beautiful Bibles. The Bibles were made out of the best parchment, you know, or the best papyrus, you know, that's where the covers were stained with, they had jewels and gold and silver on the covers, you know, and the Bible, the actual physical Bible itself, would be something that's worth, what in today's money would be worth millions of dollars. And then he says, and Christ died naked in public view, in public shame, a shameful death.
And then we, like, they have fancy Bibles that they, like, make look fancy, but then we have a Savior who died naked and stripped of all his earthly belongings. And by the way, we have 3 minutes left, so you can finish up for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just saying that the values have changed so much, this is a key value. Do we listen to some preacher who is personally physically ugly or not attractive, not wearing the best clothes, okay, but he's speaking the honest truth? Or are we looking on television at someone who's, you know, dressed to the max?
Go by their intellect, but a lot of people don't. You know, like if the preacher is knowledgeable and he feeds me spiritually, that's all I look at. Now, we had a pastor who used to weigh 350 to 400 pounds, and he got that surgery in his stomach, and he dropped to about 200, and he looked better, but he still wasn't celebrity status. But he ministered to the church one by one, and people respected him after serving 20 years. You guys, we are going to cut off in about 2 or 3 minutes, so I'm going to pass on a final thought. John, do you have one?
My final thought is that if Jesus were to walk into most churches today, they wouldn't allow him on the pulpit to speak. They would turn him away, in fact, from the front door. If some stranger came walking in off the street as a common person, as almost homeless, So, you know, we really need to look at our value system and really see what we're about. And to realize that this